Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, usually the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark, and it's a welcome return for the demonically possessed publisher of Tribute Press Comics. He is both the busiest and, you might say, the most rumpled man in comics. He's also the role model for The Equalizer, and I'm thinking Woodward, not Washington. Welcome back, Tony Esmond. Hello, Tony.
Hello, mate. Yeah. It's good to have that rotation, isn't it? I'm proud of myself.
Yeah.
You know. It's good to be back, though. Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you very much.
We only did one in, it was the end of January, start of February when we met Angoulême, wasn't it, I think?
Well, that's relevant to today, that we were sitting in a cafe in Angoulême talking a little bit about a French convention and a French comics, which is going to be relevant to what we're talking about in a moment, because I'm going to ask you about another field of European comics. But before we do that, I know you've just come back from Heroes Con. Is that in North Carolina?
It is. It's in a city called Charlotte. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's not a cheap trip, but I do love going. That's the second time. Me, Cliff Cumber and Falpy tabled last time, but we didn't get a chance to walk around enough. And it's full of like real OG creators, you know. So I thought me and Cliff, we went and just wandered and got to meet, you know, you name it, Jim Starlin, Mike Grell. I know you're going to say I'm stalking Mike Grell, but the Steve Englehart.
Steve Englehart was a big get for you because I know you're massive. A huge fan. Yeah.
I got a bit tongue-tied. Got a bit emotional as we walked away. Cliff was saying to me, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, just give me a minute." Yeah, it's a hell of a convention, man. Yeah, it's got a real love for comics. Very little other crap there, which is nice to see. A bit like, you know, if you love 2008 Lawless and then Enniskillen are like that for us, aren't they, as well, you know? But a real sort of centre on great comic, like Howard Chaykin was there, Ron Lim, you know, these sort of people. But, yeah, really lovely time, great big hall, very friendly atmosphere. Got to tell you, loved North Carolina, brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. Very nice.
And yeah. Mike Grell, the creator of Green Arrow, The Longbow Hunters, I would say he'd be a difficult character to stalk. It's more likely to be the other way around.
Yeah, I think he is an archer as well,
He'd be a hunter of you, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he'd look up. Yeah, he wears one of those sort of almost cowboy hat things all the time. You know, he's probably got something on his hip, I dare say. Yeah, very nice, though. Very nice to me. Good. You know, so, yeah. And it's, I have to say, Jim Starlin, I was second time I met him, but there was like 15 years apart. But he... I thanked him for coming along and he said, no, he says, I'm here for the fans. And I thought, that's all you want to hear, isn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah, that's the line you want. Yeah, and super friendly. Prepared to chat for ages. Mark Bucking was there. Alan Davis was there, hot off his time at Enniskillen because he'd been there previous.
Yes, he had, yeah.
Two different kettles of fish. But yeah, really good man. Yeah, I recommend it. I think I said to you, didn't I? I texted you saying, I think you'd dig it as well.
It sounds like I'd love it, and I will try and get there maybe next year instead of going to Angoulême. Angoulême was this year's big adventure, so that might be next year's.
That's why I made you have a curry. No, we had a pizza at like midnight or something.
Yes. Right. people in Europe eat very late. And
We'd already had quite a lot to drink at that point.
Can I just go back to my room, please, Tony? Right, let's get to today's book, because we've got an unusual one. Tell us, what have you chosen to come on the book club with today, Tony?
Yeah, well, I contacted you. I got very excited about this, and there's that, I don't know I think you are like it. We have like a little group of people. We find something we love to read, and we text each other saying, enthusiastically saying how good it is. And there is a UK connection to this, which we'll get onto, but initially it might not be obvious, is about the recently released in English Batman Dylan Dog, which is a 3-issue miniseries out of DC. It actually dates back to 2019 when it was released. If you imagine, they sat on it for that long, DC, which is a real shame because it's quality, by Sergio Bonelli Editore, who are the Italian publishers of Dylan Dog. And it's kind of an Italian jam. Outside of the translation and the Katie Kuber editor at DC who handled the translation duties and stuff, and the repackaging, it's all Italians, of which I will go on about this, about how they get in better than most Americans.
Well, yeah. Here is the bit where you two middle-aged English blokes butcher some Italian names.
Massively.
Let's just say, written by Batman Dylan Dog, written by Roberto Recioni, art by Gigi Cavanego and Verda Della Erdera, coloured by Giovanna Nero, Laura Ciondolini, Letters, Pat Brusso. Editors, as you've said, Katie Kubert. That is indeed Joe Kubert's granddaughter.
Yeah.
And then Michelle Maziero and Luca Del Savio, who I presume are editors on the Sergio Bonelli Editore wing of this publication.
Yeah. That's what I guessed it is, yeah.
Right, so three-issue miniseries, although they are actually, in terms of length, they're quite chunky issues, aren't they?
Yeah, they differ slightly in size, don't they, I think?
Do they? Right.
I think the first one is slightly longer because the first one is two comics put together.
Right.
As I understand it, the Italians put out like a prologue and then the first issue. So, yeah, a good 60-odd pages each, I think.
So we'll get to Dylan Dog in just a moment. But first of all, a Batman comic on Megacity Book Club.
You'll get letters. Well, I only saw it. I saw a chink in your armour, Eamon, right, to get this on your show when I realised a number of things. One, although it is Batman, it's actually mostly Dylan Dog, I would say, this comic.
Right.
It almost has a Brave and the Bold feel because Batman's in it quite a lot, but then there's whole sections where Dylan Dog is with Etrigan the Demon and John Constantine. Tyne, I don't know how you say it. We discussed this. Neither of us knows.
This, yeah.
Neither of us can remember.
It's the other one. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the UK link to it, which is the reason I thought you might go for it, is the fact that Dylan Dog lives in London. He lives in Paddington at 7 Craven Road. John Constantine's in it, which obviously gives it the UK link as well. In it, as part of the story, they go to hell, and it's the 80s at Piccadilly Circus, which both of us probably remember.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thought, oh, there you go. That's a nice little link to the UK. Now, 7 Craven Road, up until just before lockdown, was a Dylan Dog-themed cafe almost opposite Paddington train station, which you could go in. It was very loosely Dylan Dog, but I think it was called the Dylan Dog Cafe, and it had some of the original artwork painted, replicated on the walls of the cafe. Now, just when we got that, do you remember we got that break in the lockdown for like 3 months pre-Christmas? I legged it up there to see if it was still going, and it is closed.
Right.
And sadly, they painted over the murals. But yeah, I thought that was another little interesting sightsee. I guess we don't know what Dylan Dog is over here, really. I guess for Italian tourists and stuff. I mean, it is a land of hotels around there, you know.
So obviously, everybody knows who Batman is. Dylan Dog, as you say, we don't know who Dylan Dog is over here. Tell us a little bit about the character and his origins, as it were.
Okay, so I've separated it into two. So a little bit of the history of his publication, really. He was created in 1986. If you listen to the Comic Tropes YouTube channel, which is one we've talked about, I think, previously before, this is an American dude who does history comics. He claims Dog was an influence on Hellboy, which is interesting. It was created by... Tiziano Sclavi for Sergio Bonelli Editore, which is the big comics publisher, or one of the big comics publishers in Italy. The early design and the art was by Claudio Villa. Initially, he was proposed as living in New York, but it clashed with a character they also have called Martin Mystery, who lives in New York. So they moved into London. So that's the reason he's in London, really. Visually, he's based on actor Rupert Everett, as I suppose that's another UK connection. The artist Via had seen the movie Another Country. There's a really complicated history of how Rupert Everett is involved in this. Basically, Vila liked the look of him, created him in the likeness of Rupert Everett. There's also a character called the Cemetery Man who appears in, I think volume 4 of Dylan Dog, issue 4 of Dylan Dog. And later on, Rupert Everett did a movie called De la Morte de la More about that character. In America, it is called The Cemetery Man. So there's this strange circular logic as to how Rupert Everett is involved in it. He's named after Dylan Thomas, not Bob Dylan, as a lot of people think. And
not
initially,
the rabbit from Magic Roundabout then.
No, sadly not. Yeah. Apparently, the Magic Roundabout, they never got the scripts through, did they? They just watched it and made it up. I think that's genius.
Eric Thompson just made up the scripts and the dialogue based
Brilliant.
On the characters were doing. Yeah.
I feel like some comics are like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Initially, the series was a flop, but according to the editor, Decio Canzino, in an interview, he says that they waited on it. They were going to cancel it, but they gave it a few days and sales went crazy. The first story that came out was Dawn of the Living Dead, and then it's released monthly. it sells about 100,000 issues a month still in Italy. It's
astonishing.
Oh, in a country, you know, the size compared to America, where 100,000 is like worldwide sales of lucky. Yeah, if you're lucky. Yeah. Yeah. The next biggest, the top seller is Tex, which is a Western, which, again, Joe Kubert has drawn some issues of, which I think you can buy in translation now. There's various versions. I think we're going to get and talk a little bit about the styles of Italian comics, but it comes out in what I am told by an Italian lady, is when I was in Italy, it's called fumetti, which are these almost slightly larger than digest sized, slightly larger than Commando and 100 page thickness black and white comics. They're drawn by a variety of artists, all who have a fairly familiar to each other style. So they're very similar, almost like that. His sidekick is a character called Groucho. I'll talk a little bit about him in a minute, but he's literally just Groucho Marx. As I understand it, historically, Italian copyright law has been fairly loose over the years. You know, we saw all these sort of Terminator movie ripoffs and stuff, didn't we? But in the Dark Horse release, there's been very few English language releases of this. They can be categorized as either Dark Horse or Epicenter, which is the more recent one. But the Dark Horse, I think, put out 8 volumes, 8 Fumettis, and then they collected it. They were worried about rights issues, so they took out Groucho's moustache. So they redrew all the comics and took out his moustache and renamed him Felix in the American version of it. Okay, so talk a little bit about him. It's primarily a horror series. There's quite a lot of doesn't always translate humor in it. He's an ex-cop, his wife's died, and he's become a nightmare investigator is the name he says. He says that in this Batman series, actually, doesn't he?
A few times, doesn't he?
Yeah, they describe themselves. Lives in London. He's alternatively capable and feckless, casual and sort of driven, depending on, I guess, the story. He's quite a sort of cool, doesn't really care about things, is always getting caught up with the female protagonist who appears, or the female victim, or there's a noirish feel to it as well, but there's also a massive giallo influence. So there's loads of zombies, vampires, yeah, stuff like that. It's quite adult in its tone, even though it's just sold on the newsstand as like a regular book. He's very distinctive. As I say, he looks like Rupert Everett, but he wears a black jacket, blue jeans, and a red shirt. He wears that all the time. He drives a Beetle, old school Beetle. The number plate is DYD666. It's white with a black vinyl roof. There's only 2 regulars in it. If you discount a couple of the villains we're going to talk about who come back occasionally, there's only 2 real regulars, one being Groucho, who's his assistant, his sort of stroke butler, and Inspector Block from Scotland Yard, who is almost like a foil for him and then occasionally a father figure. It sort of changes a little bit as he goes on. He lives a very sort of cluttered, bohemian, messy, falling in and out of relationships, never got any money. But as Sherlock Holmes play? The violin, didn't he?
Yes.
They give a bit of that to him. He plays the clarinet in it, but he can only play one tune, which is, I sent it to you on Spotify.
You did, yes.
Did you listen to it?
I did, yeah.
Oh, good man. Yeah. Devil's Trill by Giuseppe Tartini. And that comes from a dream that Tartini had about the devil had visited him. So there's thematically, it fits into the Dylan Dog stuff. Yeah.
The composer's dream that the devil appears and sits on his bed or something and gives him this piece of music or sings this piece of music to him or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a Dylan Dog story, really.
That's a Dylan Dog story.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. He's full of quirks and little quirks that sort of appear as, I mean, there's been almost 450 volumes of this now. That's not including all the specials that come out. He has a single revolver that he always forgets, that he has to be thrown often by Groucho mid fighting back demons. And often it's not even loaded. So there's that little thing goes on. He suffers from various phobias, which I think he repeats when he gets in the Batmobile in this, or the Batplane or something. He says, I've got claustrophobia and I'm afraid of flying.
And he gets motion sickness.
That's it. Yeah. Which is why they kind of keep it to the UK for a lot of the stories. Not always London, but this one flips about in countries, but often in the countryside. He'll be out cycling in the countryside and stuff like that. And he's also now a vegetarian, and he's never got any money.
Right.
In Germany, it's called Dylan Dog, the Hunter of Nightmares. And there's a lot of humor in it as well, I think. And he just sort of flakes about between stories. You could pick one volume if you spoke Italian, which neither of us do. You don't speak Italian, do you?
No, certainly not.
No, okay, me neither, yeah. You could pick a volume off the shelf and read it, and you wouldn't need to have any pre-knowledge, which is another class bit of marketing by Sergio Benelli, I think. If only we had that here. And I think that's something I texted you about. I think that echoes a little bit of what we've read, because you don't need to have read anything else.
So here is this chunky three-issue miniseries where Dylan Dog meets Batman. As you say, he's a nightmare investigator, which I think they say in the comic here a couple of times. People say to him, "And is that a job?" And he says something like, "My bank balance would suggest otherwise."
It's a common reply. Yeah.
So they've put Batman and this paranormal investigator together. Just give us a little, very brief sort of snapshot of who they're encountering, why they're teaming up.
Yeah, so it does that classic thing that we've all seen with, you know, the Spider-Man, Superman book, you know, Dread and Batman, stuff like that, where they almost choose a villain from each universe, don't they?
Yeah.
So for complicated reasons that relate to the Joker's origin, the Joker has previously, in this sort of new canon, has met this guy called Zabaris, who is a semi-regular villain in Dylan Dog, who's kind of got some mastery over life and death and has a sort of demonic background. So the Joker travels to London to meet with this character, and Batman also follows him. Now, at the same time, Dylan Dog is hooking up with Catwoman in his house. Bruce Wayne comes to knock at the door to speak to him because he thinks he needs him, and Catwoman's there and sort of runs off. So not only do we get the classic Joker and Zabaris characters, we also get Catwoman and a character called Killex, who's a Dylan Dog character, and joining in. But we also get a number of other characters that DC readers will be familiar with. We get John Constantine turns up in issue 2, I think it is, isn't it? We get Killer Croc in issue 1, who's a foil for Catwoman and Batman, and we get like echoes of each of their universes intertwining just for these three issues. They go on because it's quite long. They flip about between places. They travel back to Gotham, travel back to London, and there's a bit of traveling to hell. So they contact one of the best introductions to John Constantine ever in a comic, as far as I'm concerned, where they knock at the door and he's on the floor lying in a puddle of puke.
Yes.
Yeah. And obviously Batman knows him. There's allusions to other characters as well. At one point, there's, I think Dylan Dog says something about, "You don't believe in ghosts," to Batman. He says, "I know one." Mm. And I don't know what you thought. I'm thinking Dead Man.
I thought that was Dead Man he was referring to, yes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And
Austin Brand Dead Man, as opposed to the 2000 AD one,
yeah, the better one. Obviously, they've got to say that. They go to hell. They meet Epicurus, which is very strange. And it sort of carries on, and then they go back again. And there's, in fact, issue 3 doesn't have much action, but it's the saving of this Killex guy, and they end up, spoilers for the end of it, but they end up taking him to heaven because it's his version of hell, which I thought was really clever. The best thing for me in the three issues is the interactions between them and the art, to be honest.
So we'll get to the art in just a moment. I'll just mention that in the second issue, although Batman is in the second issue, but it's almost becomes a Hellblazer comic in the second issue, on the trip to hell. And there's Etrigan again, of course, Jack Kirby's demon, which is always fantastic.
And rhyming as well.
Rhyming, Etrigan. We wanted to say a little something about the writing of the characters. Because we've got, as we say, we've got Batman, we've got quite a number of his supporting cast, we've got Constantine, we've got Etrigan, we've got Dylan Dog, and so on. Did you find that they nailed the characterization of these various sort of supporting cast?
I really did, man. Yeah, I really did. If you don't mind, I'll talk about Batman first, because I remember reading this and texting our buddy Al and saying, I don't think anyone's got Batman as well as these two Italian dudes.
Right.
you know, or these three Italian dudes since for years. There's the best moment where he's on a rooftop with Dylan Dog, and they haven't really connected, like, in the way that nobody connects with Batman. You know, nobody is his friend. But Dylan Dog refers to him as a vigilante, and he says, "No, I'm not a vigilante. I'm a protector," which is then this theme that carries on through issue three a little bit, right towards the last page. And just little moments like that. And like we said about the John Constantine being sick on the floor, not really wanting to help, the fact that he's got an entrance to hell in his fridge, putting a cigarette out on the floor of this sort of mystic woman's house they go to. And I just kind of felt that everyone, including Killer Croc, including the Joker, including Catwoman, you know, I think this sort of venerability we have now around Catwoman being the future wife of Batman and stuff, and it'll happen. And I've just got massively bored of that. She's this sort of incredible, she's a thief who's a massive flirt with everyone and has literally just slept with Dylan Dog when Batman appears at the door, which I don't think they would write in a DC comic now because of the Tom King series. Yeah. But yeah, they massively get Batman. He's very quiet. He's a force of nature. Visually, he's stunning. There's moments of just like Miller version stunning for me.
Yes, there were some. I noticed some distinct Miller images and pages that they would. I think they were very deliberately referencing. Yeah,
yeah. And then the demon as well. There's one moment where they're in hell and the demon's fighting this massive creature, and Dylan Dog almost makes a comment about, "I hope he survives" or something, and Constantine says to him, "No, the demon is the monster here," and you get it immediately. You think, yes, he gets it, you know. Yeah, just pitch perfect for me, to such a point where I was speaking to Al last night and we're like desperate for a hardcover. You know, I'm desperate to have this sort of oversized hardcover, but it's apparently just coming out as a softcover
in September time.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Batman, obviously the world's most famous superhero, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
He's been used, obviously, everywhere. He's teamed up with everybody over the years. In a way, this comic asks us, and I think quite successfully delivers on the idea that we can disregard a lot of the other continuity. In this one, because they say it a couple of times in this comic, the urban legend thing, that Batman at this stage is more the... He's the urban legend character. He's the character in the shadows. He's not well known to everybody. And I like that. That's the sort of Batman I want. The idea that he's part of the Justice League, I always found rather, you know, strange.
Yeah, he was always the outsider. I think it's because we're of a certain age, man, I've got to tell you. But I have Batman and Detective on my pull list. I would bankrupt myself if I put every Bat book on my pull list at the moment. I think it makes up over half of DC's previous catalogue section. But yeah, I always thought it was strange in the Justice League, dealt with in different ways. You know, the one punch incident kind of portrayed him as this loner. But I'm not massively fond of at the moment is the fact that he's part of this massive team of about eight Batmen and women. You know, and it just takes away
family. Yeah,
it takes away what I want, which I know is historically it's always happened, but it just seems nonstop. I think if you're that lone crusader in Gotham, you know, you can call on Robot Batman, you know, these sort of people, you know, you don't need it. It affects the tension. It affects the jeopardy. It affects a lot of things when you're reading it. You know, it's like if Dredd's stuck in the cursed earth, you know, he can't call anyone, you know, it's the same thing. But yeah, I think so. I think I'd rather just have him as that single character. I didn't mind stuff like Batman and the Outsiders. And I very much enjoyed the Brave and the Bold series when it was the OG version of it. But I think they're overdoing him as part of a group, which he doesn't sit well and shouldn't sit well as part of a group at all. Hmm. Yeah. He shouldn't have to rely on anyone.
No. I do like his first appearance in this comic, I think, is the classic two bad guys in a back alley.
Yeah.
Batman suddenly appears out of the shadows, which I, you know, again, I always like that part of Batman. Yeah.
Oh, don't get me wrong. This leans into cliche massively, doesn't it? You know.
Well, no, in a good way, I think. The right way. And then the other thing is that, of course, there's various moments where they're up against the bad guys and violence is required by Batman. And I also like the fact that, well, you know, when Batman does come to fight, it's quick and it's brutal and he's, you know, he finishes the fight very quickly in a way.
Yeah, and he looks like he can throw a punch. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Which is the counterpoint to Dylan Dog in this, for much of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like when Dylan Dog goes to hire Constantine. He says, have you got anything? What can you pay me with? And he just drops a batarang on the table.
Yeah.
I love that scene. I think that's really well done. Yeah. Cool.
Let's talk briefly about the artwork. We've got two artists that we weren't quite able to work out who was doing what exactly, plus two, at least two colourists, although one of the main artists coloured the prologue piece, I think.
That's right, I think, yeah. So Kevin Argo coloured the initial meeting between the two villains bit, I think. Yeah.
Right.
So we've got Werner Deodora and Gigi Cavanaugho are the two main artists, but nowhere, even with Google Translate turned on, can I find where it differentiates between what each of them did.
Right.
And looking at their styles, it's difficult to work out where the join is sometimes, I think.
What did you make about the artwork through the three issues and the depiction of these characters, these wonderful characters that they're using?
Yeah, brilliant. I love it. There's almost... a counterintuitive colouring style in it. I like. There's a matte feel to it. They'll use just colours that don't fit in the air. You know, there'll be red and yellow striking through it and stuff like that. And I really like that. And it's still maintain that noir feel to it. The colouring does do some of the heavy lifting, I think, on it. It's fair to say, but the line work and the acting, I think, is great. I think the facial acting is up there with some of the greats. I think you and I think we've talked about Steve Dillon being one of the best facial acting artists ever. And I think there's a reach for that somewhere in what they're doing. You've got two distinctive character sets. You've got the brutality and the muscularity of Batman and Killer Croc and these characters. And you've got the almost like louche Dylan Dog characters wanting about like he's out of a new romantic band or something. And I think it works really well. And I loved it. Yeah. So the palettes they use in Hell and the palettes they use when they're going to see the Joker in his sort of little home turf area are very evocative of the personalities of the things that are happening, which I think works really well. Yeah. Yeah. But like I say, there's definitely some Frank Miller there in the Dark Knight designs.
Yes. I thought there was some clear homages to certain panels from the Dark Knight, which I loved to see.
Yeah.
And of course we get Batman pictured on Gotham rooftops, you know, the cloak billowing out and all that rainy rooftop scenes. That stuff is all great. I thought this was fantastic in terms of the art, the way they used the artwork, and also this complaint I gave to you about other comics, that I have this thing with modern superhero comics that the colouring to me looks very bland in a way, very sort of
neat. I agree, man. Yeah, there's I think the paper makes a huge amount of difference, I think, as right. Well, because this is almost newsprint, isn't it? It's like thick newsprint almost. It's got a matte feel to it. So I think when you get the shiny paper that a lot of comic companies use, it distracts a bit. But yeah, and whilst I say that the colouring does some of the lifting on this work, so elsewhere it does massive amounts of lifting. And the sort of whole lens flare motion use of colouring, I think, I picked up a couple of the recent issues of Batman before we started recording, and I thought, yeah, there's just no comparison. Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah.
People over-colour, and like they do with a lot of things. I think tell the story using the art. We don't need to over-noodle. Yeah, definitely.
And rereading it this week, I was... You know, this is the best Batman comic I've read for ages.
So many people are saying that to me, and I said exactly. I think I texted you saying this is what it is. But for me as well, it's one of the best ones I've read in like almost a decade, I'd say. But the reviews were super lukewarm. I went through about, because I never try and look at reviews until after I've thought about it myself, you know, and written some notes. So I went back this morning over coffee and looked through, and they were pretty lukewarm. And I don't know what's going on in the world, Eamon. These people are.
Well, I mean, I would say I perhaps don't read enough Batman comics to know for sure, but certainly this is the best one I've read for donkey's years. This is, you know, terrific. This is the sort of Batman I want.
Yeah.
And, of course, it also introduces me to Dylan Dog and his supporting cast, which I confess I knew next to nothing about.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you, because there's been next to nothing come out in English. Yeah. You know, it's crazy, really. The Epicenter, they do Zagor as well, which is talk a bit about Bonelli in a second, but they do some Zagor books, and I think they do some text stuff as well as releases. But they're like a nightmare to get hold of. If you don't get in on the Kickstarter, which has obviously got massive post costs for us in the UK, you're going to miss out on it. And like the Dark Horse releases are very expensive, and everything else is just Italian or French. So it's not an easy one to get hold of. Yeah.
Right. So as we said, at the end of January, you and I were sitting in a cafe in Angoulême on our sort of crossover, because you were heading out and I was heading in.
Yeah, I think it was like 12 hours we were there at the same time, wasn't it? Yeah.
And as you know, I was somewhat overwhelmed by the French comics market, because until you've experienced something like Angoulême, we have no idea of the size of that market, do we?
No, we don't. No.
You know, we think obviously Asterix, Tintin, and we can probably name a couple of others, heavy metal and so on. But then there's just so much stuff. So that's French comics. Tell me a little bit about Italian comics or Fumetti, Tony.
Just quickly on the French comics, every so often, as soon as I go to Angoulême, I make a concerted effort to try and learn more French. Right. When I come away.
Yeah, me too.
And
yeah.
Me being an old man, I'm rubbish at it and nothing sticks. But yeah, Italian comics are really interesting. They're not as a massive market as they are in France, I think that's fair to say. But they do, they are for sale at every train station. They have newsstands in a lot of the Italian cities. And I went to Lucca, about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And that is just a massive deal. And I'm told that's bigger than Angoulême. Someone told me the other day that's more footfall than Angoulême.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I find surprising.
It's the bigger one. Yes. But you went there once.
Yeah. So it's in a walled, it's like a walled city. And when I was there, Terry Moore was there doing a transit, for the American career. And we just went because we hadn't, my mate's wife was Italian and we hadn't been to it. And we thought, oh, that's a nice little trip. We'll double up. We stayed in Pisa, which is where it's near. It's like a 40-minute drive. And then we drove in every day because it was just too expensive to stay in Lucca. But yeah, it's an international market. It's mostly European creators. They do have some UK creators there as well. And it's, you know, the halls you went into Angoulême that were owned per publisher.
Yes.
It's a bit like a mix of that and the Comic Mart.
Right.
Is how it sits in Lucca. I had a quick look through some Italian comic stuff. And I think it's worth mentioning Sergio Bonelli Editore, which is the people who publish Tex, Dylan Dog, Martin Mystery, all these big characters that they're longstanding. They're like 1940. They started, by Gianluigi Bonelli, and they're based in Milan, which I think is a bit like Dundee. I think it's like the center for comics. Right. It's a bit like that. Right. And he's published comics for so many great creators, but I picked a few out. Guido Cripax, I'm a fan of. Have you seen Guido Cripax before?
I have seen some of the artwork.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah. Hugo Pratt and Sergio Toppi. They published rather than reprint. And so they've got Tex Zagor, Nathan Never, Martin Mystery, Dampier, Nick Rader, all the stuff that it comes in that format, the Dylan Dog digest format. I think I probably first became aware of, you might have been at this festival actually, of Italian comics after at Bristol one year in the 90s. I'm going to say in like mid 90s, early 90s. Do you remember they used to have like a cinema show you could go to?
Yes.
They had a cinema show in this place, and I can't remember where the life in it was, but they showed Danger Diabolique by Mario Brava.
Right.
Mario Brava.
Yes, I know the one.
Yeah, which is obviously a massive comic in Italy as well, massively long running. In fact, they've just made another version of the movie, which I'd really like to see. It looks really cool. But it's mixed up. So Italian comics has various levels and various areas and stuff like that. You've also got the newsstand. They're definitely moving to graphic novel bookshop sales. When I was in Rome 5 years ago, a buddy of mine, Maro, took me to this area of a shop, and it's like the manga area in Waterstones times 10. You know, it's just this massive area. Again, like France, manga's massively moved into Italy as well. So it's a big stage in there. They're very adult in a lot of their comics. Being Europeans, they seem to sell them in the same places that they sell everything else. There's no real sort of top shelf market going on. But you've got to remember that also ranks Xerox, which is heavy metal, I think,
is
Italian.
That, yeah.
A lot of their stuff is very erotic. I think I showed you it. I've got a comic called Lucifera, which is the one where she has sex with Adolf Hitler. Have you seen that one?
No.
they really go there. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
okay.
Satanic is another one. And they do have a lot of anthology titles. Disney is massive, by the way, in Italy. So I think they've actually had to start creating product for Uncle Scrooge and stuff like that just for the Italian market because it's so big out there. And that comes in massive digests, comics. But they do have versions of their comics as well in digest. There's one called Gulp I looked at the other day. And then I think the creator of Dylan Dog, he was involved in the putting out the Italian version of Pilote, which is the French one. Is it Tintin? Not Tintin. Someone like that's in. It's the famous French anthology. So they've got their own arm in Italy as well, putting out French product. Not so much superheroes. A lot of same as Europe, man. We talk about this all the time. You know, they seem to love Westerns in Europe. They do more Westerns in Europe than they do in America. So a lot of Western comics as well. Yeah, very little what we, you know, I've not seen many war or football comics or, you know, which is our staple. Well, historically, it's been our staple here. But yeah, it's an interesting market. It's very much the common man. Comics for the common man, which I think we're missing, aren't we? France and Italy seem to have that tied down. While in the UK, you have to research where to find a comic, don't you, before you hit the road every day. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really interesting.
I mean, we touched on some other comics markets. Obviously, you know, France. On your podcast, you touched on manga a fair bit.
Yeah.
I'm astonished in a way at the size of the fact that Dylan Dog probably monthly outsells Batman.
Yeah, I think it does.
In Italy is astonishing.
Yeah.
And you were showing me before we recorded on camera, you've got a few Dylan Dog collections and some of the English, the very limited English versions that there have been.
Yeah. So that was the Dark Horse. I've got a couple of the Epicenter books. I've got them in front of me, which tend to be, I think, De La Rosa is one. They've got it's almost like the more arty version of Dylan Dog. Is what Epicenter reprints. So there's more brushwork and more color work and stuff like that. It tends to be what Epicenter produce. But I know it's terrible, but I do buy the Italian versions for the covers because they are absolutely lovely. And in Italy, a lot of the people who do the covers are loved. They really are by the Italian comic readers and Italian people. But yeah, really beautiful stuff. If you go to the Bonelli website, it's like, oh, I so wish this was all in English.
Astonishing. Well, look, Batman Dylan Dog is a 3-issue miniseries that came out recently. I'm guessing you can probably still pick up the issues on eBay. They're digitally available, $3.99 each on Kindle, Comixology, if you do that sort of thing. I confess I did. It's a great story. It's got fantastic art. It is the best Batman comic you'll read, certainly at the moment.
I'd put it up there with some Constantine issues of the last few years as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it gets Constantine spot on as well. It is fantastic, actually, and I know you were blogging about it when it first came out, and I was slightly slow to get on board, but I did pick it up, and it's terrific.
Yeah, it really is terrific.
And rereading it this week, it's like, oh, yeah, this is great. This is great comics. Yeah.
It's a masterclass in art as well, and it's a masterclass in just doing the characters right, keeping it simple and making it fun, I think.
Now, we said there's a collected version scheduled for September, which we think is just listed as a trade paperback.
Yeah, I know. Al Henderson, Al was telling me about that the other day. He was saying, why isn't there? In fact, we then spent the whole of yesterday sort of poring over eBay and French publishers to find out there's a French version coming out in hardback. But yeah, and didn't you tell me it's some stupid amount? It's like 35 quid or something.
It's currently listed at £36 on the pre-release for September. Seems pricey, but there you go.
Don't they all? Yeah.
And as you say, for that price, you would expect to get the nice hardback.
Yeah. You would, wouldn't you? Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope we get some, for that price, I'm hoping we're getting some back matter. Look, I'm just looking at the price now. It's now reduced to 17 quid.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's good. Good news. Yeah.
That I hope we get some back matter in terms of working out exactly how the artist who did what and so on, if you see.
Well, interestingly, you may be able to ask them, because Werner Delladera is going to be at Thought Bubble.
Right.
I'm guessing off the back that he's done Something Is Killing the Children, which is super hot at the moment, isn't it? And he's done some Night Terrors.
He's the only one, the name that I sort of recognise because of that.
He's also part of Scott's Collectibles, which is the agent that also did Mine Simmons is also from Ministry of Department of Truth, is also part of. And Gigi, you're saying, aren't you? Yeah. Kevin Argo, he's going to be at the Lakes coming up.
Right.
And he's done the poster for the Lakes, which I got in on and got a copy. There's a print of it, which I got in. It's lovely. Really nice. Which is the Hugo Pratt character on this, you know, on the side of the lake with a swan, and just beautiful. Yeah, really nice.
Corto Maltese.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're right. I have seen this. And, of course, it's the second time you mentioned him, of course, because we have done a bit of Hugo Pratt.
Yes, of course.
Not all that long ago on the book club. Because, you know, there's a great British War Comics collection.
Yeah.
But it's just like a huge name in European comics.
I wonder why. I know the Lakes have these sort of connections into Europe, don't they? So I'm hoping, because they've done that Europe Comics Award this year as well, haven't they? So, because he's not done much else. Oh, the other thing I should mention that he's done, of course, which I absolutely adored, was The Magic Order Volume 3 with Mark Miller, which I think is getting a reprint because they've moved over to Dark Horse. But that book is like a revelation every volume. It's a different artist. But I saw his and it was straight off beautiful stuff. Yeah.
Great stuff. Right. Let's turn you back to the artwork before we leave Batman and Dylan Dog, because we've got to play a presumably expensive round of the Girl Page game.
Yeah, I hope it's physical, don't you? I hope he's doing physical art.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. So let's go back to the wonderful pages with the various wonderful characters, because you've got, as I say, they're long issues. You've got quite a few to pick from, but I know you've got a particular brooding moment in mind.
There's two, but I reread it like you did last night, I think, and I got to the last page and I thought, to me, it's got, because Batman's a massive character who I've read over the years, I thought it's got to have Batman in it. I would rather have Batman and Dylan Dog, but nothing was jumping out to me. And then I got to the last page after screenshotting every third page, you know, to sort of say, I'd like that one, I like that one, then like that one. And I got to the last one, and it's got this motif of the protector thing in the end of it, and it's got Batman full figure. I think there was that one. I think if that's not available, Eamon, I might go for an alternative, which is Dylan Dog, and it's in issue 2. It's hard to tell because they're not numbered, are they, the pages? But it's halfway through with Hellblazer and Dog standing on a cliff.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's just incredible. And like I say, the problem with this is if it's just black and white art, the colour makes up so much of these pages, doesn't it? It's a real part of it. But, I'd definitely – they're the two. If I'd add Batman first and the second one of Hellblazer, Constantine and Dylan Dog in Hell would be my second choice, I think. What about you?
So it's the very last issue of very last page of issue 3, which thankfully doesn't give us any spoilers, but does have Batman poised on a gargoyle overlooking Gotham. But as you say, also has that protector motif in there. So that's a great page. We'll give you that.
Great covers as well, mate. I must mention the covers.
The covers are fantastic. Yeah. Issue 2, Dylan Dog and Hellblazer. In Hell, we'll give you that page as well.
Okay, thank you. It's very kind of you.
Wonderful colours. I was quite taken with, also in issue 2, Batman and Dylan Dog getting the Batwing.
Yeah, that's great.
And the reason I mentioned that particular panel is because I think that's one of the deliberate nods to Dark Knight and Batman in the Batmobile.
Ah, okay.
Where the camera is sort of looking at him from the console and the equipment and everything. But actually, I might... Because you've chosen the last page, I might choose Batman and Dylan Dog on Gotham.
The one we were sending pictures of to each other last night. Those ones. Yeah.
Yes. And the one where he says to him, you know, on the previous page, Dylan Dog has described him as a vigilante. And Batman says, I'm not a vigilante.
Yeah.
And then he says, well, what are you? And you've got, you know, Gotham. You've got Batman, you've got Dylan Dog, you've even got pizza on that page.
I like that. He says, you want some pizza? And he just turns around and he's built, isn't he? And he says, well, yes, clearly you don't. That, see, that's what I love about the writing in these, is firstly, that one in the cockpit is perfect encapsulation of both of them. You know, yeah, just brilliantly done and brilliantly realised in the art. And then the next one, I can see a writer at DC writing that wrong, because you've got the beats are perfect where he says to him, you're a vigilante. And Batman says, I'm not a vigilante, because Batman doesn't have to explain himself to anyone. And I can see someone putting in the same panel, so I'm not a vigilante, I'm a protector. He doesn't need to explain himself. He's got to be asked to do that. You know, because he doesn't owe this man anything, this sort of idiot who's, you know, plays the clarinet and is a bit rubbish. You know, and I think the pacing on that is beautifully done. Really well done. Yeah.
On the other page, Durandog says to Batman, you think of everything, don't you? And Batman's reply is, that's why I'm still alive.
Yeah. Another great one. Yeah. Well, Durandog is a character who thinks of nothing. You know, yes, other than diving into bed with a lady. I sent you a screenshot of something yesterday, didn't I? And you went, oh, you've managed to include the topless picture in it as well. Yeah.
Well, because he does the Sin City thing of waking up in a hotel room with a woman who's dead.
Yeah, basically. Classic Durandog. I would hate to count how many times that has happened over the last 450 volumes. Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah.
So, Batman Durandog, highly recommended. The best Batman comic you will read for quite some time. Plus, it will give you a little inkling of the market or the one of the key characters in Italian comics, which is interesting.
And it's a shame you can't go and have breakfast having some scrambled egg on toast at the cafe now, which is a real shame. Because I know a lot of people come into Paddington, you know, from the West Country and Wales and stuff. You could just walk across the road, have a bit of breakfast. It would be great. But that's a shame. Yeah.
I guess, obviously, the Rupert Everett film, what's it called again? Della Morte,
yeah. Yeah, that's it's on Prime for free.
I should have watched it.
It's
right.
It's had a DVD release. I'm not sure about the Blu-ray. There is a Brandon Routh Durandog, I think it's called Dead by Night, where they get it massively wrong. I think Brandon Routh made a good Superman. He does not make a good Durandog. And they move it to New Orleans and they add in all these lore that doesn't exist. And it's a mess, I think. And I think it was just a critical financial failure as well. So, but you can find that. I think that's available on DVD. And I think it's available on like Sky or someone like that. I think you can watch it. Yeah. But you know Brandon Routh now. Does he hold the record for playing the most comic characters, I think, at some point in his life, doesn't he? You know? Yeah.
Because he was in the... what was the other movie? The Ramona Flowers.
He plays one of the boyfriends, doesn't he? And he's in Legends of Tomorrow. He plays the Atom in that. And yeah, he's played a few.
Excellent stuff. Well, interesting choice, Tony.
Thank you, mate.
Good fun. I really enjoyed
good stuff.
And the covers, as you say, are great. And I'm looking forward. I might actually get the paperback version, even though I've got the three issues digitally as well.
That's our curse, Eamon.
It's our curse, yeah, to buy things twice.
I'm sure 2018 survives financially on the fact that I go and buy stuff that I remember from when I was 14. Yeah, yeah.
Here's this thing. Please go and buy it again. Yeah. I've talked to, as you know, Pat Mills. As we're recording, the Pat Mills episode is about to come out tomorrow. Yep. This episode won't come out for several weeks yet. An interview that you set up for me. And, of course, we talked a little bit about there's a new Horned God coming out. And then next year we get Slain, the definitive edition as well.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Well, Bisley was at Heroes.
Was he? Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
He was also on my plane. And I've got to say, when we went on board, he turned left. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I did not. But
he went up to the posh.
Yes,
end.
He did. Yeah, right. Yeah.
You were back in what the Americans would call coach.
I was. Yeah, amongst an American school trip. Which you can imagine meant I got no sleep. But yeah, for a 9-hour flight.
Tony, great fun as always.
Thanks, mate.
Let's turn to your own projects and talk a little bit about you, because as ever, you're keeping quite busy. The Awesome Comics podcast comes out every week.
Yeah.
You and the three amigos carry on journeying through the world of mostly small press comics.
Is it Porthos? Is that who I am?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
The four musketeers, yeah. Or the three musketeers and D'Artagnan. I cast you as Porthos in that group.
Yeah, all I got is a text from Dan that just said Porthos? Yeah.
yeah. Dan Butcher, I think, immediately went for Aramis, the lover.
Oh,
not
they
the
went for them. You didn't. Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'll have a word with them. Yeah.
So that carries on. That does great work every week.
Yeah, I mean, we always have fun with it, man. We've had some great guests on recently. Sandy Carpenter, John Carpenter's wife, who's got a comics imprint, and Steve Niles.
Jeff Smith.
What a nice guy. What a lovely guy he was. Yeah, really friendly and drank a lot of wine, which we appreciated. Yeah.
And you did a great interview with Garth Ennis.
Yeah, that was good. Thank you. Which is you set that up for us, mate, which I really do appreciate. Thank you so much. He was really nice. Yeah.
He was very good. It was a really good, that's well worth going to listen to, because it's one of the best Garth Ennis interviews that I've heard.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Well.
Cheers. Well, you've done a few crackers yourself, so that's good. Yeah.
Wow. I've pulled a few crackers. As well as the Awesome Comics podcast, you've got the Never Iron Anything brand, which is both a podcast and a blog. The podcast carries on with occasional episodes about various bits of artwork or process or particular comics. That's great fun.
Yeah, I had a bit of it. I had a 2-month break earlier in the year, and we're back on schedule now, although we're not on schedule because you were meant to do one with me today and I haven't finished revising it yet, so to be honest. But yeah, I just did one about Rupert Bear, believe it or not. Yeah. And then it
fascinating, though.
Really, really fascinating. Really, really interesting one with Al Henderson appears on it a lot. And the previous four to that were almost like artist roundtables where I talked with artists. So I'd collect Helena, Falpy, 4P, and Ian Ashcroft and Cliff Cumber. So we got together and just talked about process and stuff like that and influences, which is really lovely. And obviously, Ian and Cliff have been working with Pat recently on the Spacewalk project. So that's nice. Yeah. Cool.
And I learned, of course, as you and I texted, that it's Rupert Bear. The in the thing seems to have come from that song.
I think it has. I think that's where it's come from. Yeah, they're quite Bestel is quite, he doesn't like it if you put the in. It's like not putting the hyphen in Spider-Man. I get the intent. It's a bit like that, I think. Yeah.
On the Never Iron Anything blog, you also do comic reviews, and you do a weekly tops and bottoms of the things you've read, because you read a lot of comics, Tony.
Yeah.
And I know that Batman Dylan Dog made the tops list one week, which I think was what turned me on
to
it.
Thank you, mate.
So that comes out once a week, doesn't
it? Every Wednesday. I just like to say what the best thing is. I usually drivel on about something or other to start with, and then I'd say what my favourite thing is of the week and what my least favourite thing is of the week. And then I quote the amount of comics I've read that week so people can get an idea where the spread is. And there's usually other things, like I'll pimp other like festivals and podcasts and things I've been to and new projects and stuff like that. Yeah. It's just a bit of fun. It's not serious reviewing. I do that separately and on the podcast, but it's just a sort of quick flash of stuff, what's good and what's not. Yeah.
And then you also publish comics under Tribute Press. Anything happening or coming up there?
Yeah, so Tribute Press is myself, Daryl Thorpe, Adam Falp, and Cliff Cumber, the four of us. We've just put out the collected Cockney Kung Fu. That's about 2 months ago. We've just finished a Kickstarter. We're just on the second test print for Flesh and Ink, which is the new, we call it a graphic novel, but it's almost like digest size. It's only a small book, but it's over 100 pages. So we're hoping that's going to be coming back from the printer maybe in 2 weeks' time now, once we get the test print sorted, and then we'll be sending that out. I just did, I'm writing a column now for a comic called a comic magazine called American Nature Presents, which is by the guys who run the Greg and Fake, who run the Santos sisters. That's a cover. I've shown you this before, haven't I? Yeah.
No, I haven't seen
that.
Yeah.
And they're really nice guys, and they just messaged me. I met them for the first time in Heroes, and they said, just want to write a page for us. So I write a page, but it's actually got some really good comics in it. It's got regular Santos sisters. It's got work by Josh Pettinger, who's a UK guy from the Isle of Wight, believe it or not, who now lives in America. Rich Tomasso, if you know Rich Tomasso's stuff, Agent Seal and stuff like that, and Adam Tinius. So it's kind of in the, almost in that outlaw comics area. It's that sort of little bubbles, strangers, kayfabe, Ben Mara kind of area. So I jumped to that. They're really nice, and they put it out really quickly, actually. So got to write the second one for that soon. Yeah, it's a busy man. Yeah, busy.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Any Kickstarters or particular releases coming up on that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Flesh and Ink, if you didn't back it, that would be going on the Big Cartel once we've sent it out to backers first. Tony Osmond 2, still on the, so we're halfway through that now. Cliff's doing the art.
Is Cliff Cumber drawing?
Yes,
that,
he is, yeah. I showed, we hang out with Nathan Kelly, he's a buddy of ours, who actually lives in Charlotte, and we showed him some of the preview art, and all, he just, Nathan's like a massive ex-army, you know, he's like this, he looks like he's a defensive line for a football team, you know, and he just went, oh no, he just... It's a, oh no, it's constantly. Yeah, so we've got that on the. We've got another anthology coming through from me and Falpy, but that's just in the works. So, yeah.
So, two podcasts, a blog, your own comic publishing organization. Anything else you want to plug or mention here, Tony?
No, sorry, that's too much. I'm sorry, Eamon. Yeah, but I'd like to plug last week's episode with the Don, with the Rich Chief, which I listened to, which will be a few weeks ago now by the time people hear this. But, Jeffries loved it. I actually rewound and listened to things. What does Rich? He gets the title wrong. He calls it sex, drugs, and what's the plant? Geraniums. Sex, drugs, and geraniums. And I'm thinking, you've got to write a blog titled that, Don. You know what I mean? It's like you got to do it. I'd love that. Yeah, that was a great episode. Love that episode. I love all your episodes. All really good. Yeah,
thank you, Tony.
Even your Madam Web one. Even your Madam Web.
Richard Chief and I always meet up at Lawless, and this year we actually drove down together.
Oh, nice.
And so we had a great road trip on the way down, and exchanged cricket jokes for some
reason. Oh, he loves cricket, doesn't he? Yeah.
He does. He loves his cricket, and he loves British comics and blogging about them. And, yeah, great. And, of course, never on anything, and Tony Esmond not on social media.
Not really. I think I've got an Instagram thing I do. And we've got the podcast account, so if you want to, yeah.
As ever, look in the show notes. You'll find links to the Awesome Comics podcast, to Never Iron Anything, the podcast and the blog, and to Tribute Press. You may also find a link to the Spotify file where you can listen to the music from Dylan Dog.
Brilliant. There's a couple that are sort of, you know, fashionable, trendy, you know, good-looking youngsters playing it. And then I found the one with the face of an Italian man that looks like he's been hit with a shovel. He looks like he's got a load of water in his cheeks, doesn't he? Have you noticed that picture?
He does.
Yeah, I thought that's the one I'm sending you. You're getting that one. Yeah.
Great stuff. And do check out Batman Dylan Dog.
Yeah, please do.
It's a great little mini-series, using characters extremely well. Great. Thank you, Tony.
My pleasure, mate. Thanks for that.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. Find all of these links we've been discussing at Mega City Book Club. You can see the Grail pages we've chosen by following the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, Mastodon, the 2000 AD Forum, the new social media platform called The Devil's Trills, and I may be retiring that joke shortly. Tony. Or email me mcbcpodcast@gmail.com if you want to discuss a book on the book club, or if you want to have any comments or criticisms or suggestions or reasons why I should not be covering Batman.
Please write into him about that. Yeah.
Until next time, it's goodbye from me, and
it's goodbye from me. Bye.